You're listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and Friends, the number one source for travel news, reviews, and in-depth travel journalism, broadcasting live from Florida's Sun Coast on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Don't forget, you can listen to us online 24/7 at ttrn.com. And now, here's the travel guy, Roy Lowy.
Well, thank you, Mike. This is Roy Lowy, and you're listening to Talking Travel, broadcast live worldwide from South Florida. My guests today are Evan Eggers, Gary Sane, Peter Flaherty, Michelle Newman, when we come back.
This is the story of Mary and Larry. They had cabin fever so bad it was scary.
We need a vacation, a place warm and sunny, a place that's fun for not much money.
Let's escape the cold and the snow. We'll fly Sky Value from Gary, Chicago.
Sky Value now offers great rates from convenient Gary, Chicago Airport to your favorite hotspots, Orlando, St. Pete, Fort Lauderdale, Phoenix, and Las Vegas. Book your flight at flyskyvalue.com.
Gary, Chicago Airport works for me. The drive was easy.
The parking secure and free.
Sky Value sure saved us money.
You're so smart.
And so is my honey.
And they flew Sky Value from Gary, Chicago Airport happily ever after. Fares are one-way subject to availability and change. Restrictions apply. Fares do not include September 11th security fees and other U.S. taxes and fees. See participant agreement for details. Sky Value flights operated by Extra Airways, PC number 06154.
This segment is brought to you in part by ShoreCruise.com, your online cruise superstore, and in part by USA 3000 Airlines, offering low-cost fares from St. Petersburg, Orlando, Fort Myers, and Fort Lauderdale to seven cities. You can check out their schedule on our website. It's always a pleasure to have Mr. Evan Eggers of ShoreCruise.com, and he's on the phone with us now to bring us up to date on the cruise news. Welcome, Evan.
Good morning, Roy.
I kind of like that happily ever after. Can you hear the commercials when we go into them?
Yeah, I sure can. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Well, then, you know, everything is happily ever after. We've got that little fairy tale going.
Which we have to appreciate.
Yeah, right. Anyway, what's happening in the cruise news? What's the buzz today?
Well, not too much earth-shattering news, but some interesting stuff out there. One is that, very quietly, Celebrity Cruises has ended their partnership with Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, you may recall there was quite a bit of fanfare that they actually, on a couple of their larger vessels, they actually redid a couple of the lounges in the ship. They call them the bar at the edge of the earth. They had a Cirque du Soleil-themed event occur up there. And the challenge was, the big challenge they had all along is when people heard that there was something going on with Cirque on board, they assumed it was a Cirque show.
Right.
But it wasn't really a Cirque show. It was kind of like a Cirque experience, but not a Cirque show.
Right.
And that confused people a bit. And they never did roll it out to the entire fleet. And in the end, what they quietly said when they, and decided to end the relationship was that they were reasonably happy with it, but they weren't able to expand it the way they wanted. Neither they nor Cirque thought they could deliver the kind of experience people would expect when they heard the Cirque name on board the ship. So it just wasn't working out, and they decided to stop doing it. So no big problem. It just wasn't the slam dunk they were hoping for, which is too bad because the Cirque brand and the Celebrity brand certainly would be very compatible.
Yeah, it seemed to work. And then they probably had to really juggle around and come up with a quick fix for that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. I agree. And, it's too bad, but I can easily see. I mean, you've seen Cirque shows, I know.
Right.
The things that Cirque does on stage aren't all that amenable to being on a ship that's rocking and rolling.
Right.
So the idea of putting together a show involving, things that could injure people on a ship that's really moving around.
When that rope is swinging around in a circle and all of a sudden the ship shifts, you kind of wonder, I kind of had my questions about that, but most of the cruises, 90% of them, as we know, are pretty smooth. But you do get those that can get a little shaky and choppy.
That's right, absolutely. So what else is going on? Queen Victoria, King Arthur's latest queen.
I saw that. How about that?
Yeah, this is very exciting. So the Queen Victoria, the latest queen coming out of Cunard, will have her inaugural voyage in December of this year. And she had a milestone earlier this week being floated out of dry dock. So this is the first time that, as they say, the first time the ship met water for the first time when they went ahead and flooded the dry dock. And before they did that, even they also do some fun ceremonies. For good luck, they weld coins beneath the mast of the ship, and they picked a euro because the ship was built in Italy, and they picked a gold Queen Victoria sovereign, because of course the ship is named the Queen Victoria.
How cool is that, huh?
It is. I mean, really, the tradition and the pomp and pageantry of floating a ship out of a shipyard is hasn't changed much over the years, and it's pretty cool. And so Queen Victoria, for people who may not have been following it, will be the second largest Cunard ship at 90,000 tons. It'll be bigger than the Queen Elizabeth, smaller than the Queen Mary. And this actually represents the first time in Cunard's 167-year history that there have been three Cunard ships named after queens. So they're in service at the same time. So that's a pretty exciting milestone for them. And the Queen Victoria of the three ships is going to be designed primarily for wandering all around the world. So the Queen Mary, of course, does, although it does wander around the world, the Queen Mary was originally, Queen Mary II was built for transatlantic service, was its big reason for being built. The Queen Victoria will wander all over, going to all kinds of cool places. And for people who have a spare $20,000 per person hanging around, I understand from Cunard that there are spots on the maiden world voyage still available on the Queen Victoria, sailing on December, December, when does it sail? Oh, I don't know when it sails.
Well, it's coming out, January 15th it came out, and then, maiden voyage, December 11th.
Yeah, December 11th is the maiden
from
voyage.
From Southampton,
the world
cruise
shortly after that.
Right.
So.
And then, of course, they let loose with a bottle of Italian Prosecco as a christening, as the christening bottle.
Which makes me want to head out to my liquor store and try and find some. What is that?
Yeah, I don't know. I was waiting for you to come back and say, oh yeah, and I love that wine.
Well, I'm half Italian. I should know, but I've got to call my mom and find out.
I see that two more guys messed up down in the Grand Cayman.
I don't know what it is with U.S. tourists.
Yeah.
U.S. tourists bringing marijuana into the Caribbean island. It's just not a good idea.
That's for sure.
And, the Caribbean, although people should know that when you're in a foreign country, of course, you're subject to the laws of those countries.
Right.
And in various places in the world, drug laws range from more severe than here to downright draconian. Like, you know, God save you if you're busted with drugs in Singapore. Forget about it.
Right.
So in the Caribbean, they're stricter than here. These two gentlemen got off the Carnival Victory, and Cayman authorities had drug dogs there who smelled marijuana on them. The guys, were searched, admitted they had marijuana, admitted they had more on the ship. And in a kind of funny side note, in the end, they were just held overnight and released after paying about $1,800 per person, which is some very expensive jail accommodation, I would say. But an amusing part of this is the judge actually gave them a lecture saying, listen, the judge in the Cayman Islands said to these guys, the U.S. may not have enough jail space to accommodate low-level drug users like yourself and put you in jail. Here in the Cayman Islands, we have plenty of room, and we'll be happy to accommodate you on an extended basis.
It was decent of them not to do that. You know, kind of give them a slap on the knuckles and say, hey, guys, smarten up for crying out loud.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, they got off very easy, and the Cayman Islands were polite about it. I mean, basically, overnight in jail and an $1,800 per person fine is as lightly as they possibly could have gotten off down there.
Yeah, I mean, after watching that movie years ago, what was it called, Midnight Express, that put the fear of God in me when that fellow spent all that time in prison. And that's scary stuff. And yet you go to Amsterdam, and it's open. So the point is that you need to use your head if you're going to – I mean, I just don't think it's a good idea to certainly even consider doing that. I don't know.
That's right. Why tempt fate with a criminal justice system of a foreign country? That is not good.
Yeah, that's taking some serious chances, and these guys got lucky. I'll bet they're, that $1,800 is the best $1,800 they ever spent, even though it wasn't a five-star accommodation.
Now, I wonder if that was per person double occupancy.
Yeah. Well, it definitely was double occupancy,
Do you think that included taxes and fees? Do you think there was a resort fee?
I don't think they have taxes and fees. Anyway, let's see, what else is – you're going to go on the President's Cruise.
I am. We're doing – Sure Cruise is doing a President's Cruise. I'll be leading a group on board the Grand Princess,
right.
Sailing April 14th from Galveston to the Western Caribbean.
Right.
And being as – it's all about me, basically, Roy. So I've never – this is – we've laughed about this before, that I've never been to the Western Caribbean, which is just hilarious given the business that I'm in.
Right.
So I figured it was time to correct that error. The Grand Princess is a beautiful ship, one of the princess ships that has movies under the stars. And so I'm really looking forward to it. I've never been in Galveston. I've never been to Costa Maya. I've never been to Honduras or Belize or Cozumel, for that matter. And I'm a scuba diver. So correcting for myself a grave injustice I've done with my upbringing, having not been to the Western Caribbean.
And that whole wall runs all the way down from Cozumel down through Belize. That's a great diving wall.
Oh, no, I know. I mean, it's legendary in scuba diving community. It's a phenomenal place to dive. So anyway, we're looking forward to welcome aboard customers and friends, and, you know, you're obviously invited. It would be just delightful if you were able to join us.
Well, that's fine. They're very kind. What's the date? I better write it down right now.
April 14th. Put it on your calendar. And among other things, what I want to do is share. I'll also be doing some onboard seminars. I'll be sharing knowledge with everybody who comes along about things such as how to cruise for free, which is, you know, most people aren't aware that they can round up a small group of friends and family to cruise with them.
Right.
They can earn a free cruise fare. So I'll be giving some onboard seminars about topics like this that people who like to cruise will probably find somewhat eye-opening.
Now, just walk me through it again. It's on April 14th,
yeah.
And your company has invited them. SureCruise.com is hosting this. Is that the way
that's
it's
right? That's exactly right.
Okay. And so how do they sign up for this on your website?
Well, it'll be live on the homepage of our website within a day or two. This
right.
is actually a new initiative, so right on the homepage you'll be able to see the President's Cruise and click on it and read all about it and sign up for it. And we're actually, people who sign up pretty soon will be getting benefits like a lower deposit until final payment is due, which of course is not too long from now. They'll be getting onboard coupon books to spend on things, and we'll be doing some other nice things for people on board.
That sounds really exciting, and certainly... you're getting to see some places you haven't seen, plus do all your presentations. What could be nicer?
Exactly.
What a way to do business.
And the prices are fantastic. We're taking advantage of the fact that, you know, with all the warm weather we've had across the country until now, all the warm weather we've had until now has kind of not made people think about booking a cruise.
Right, and as you say, the prices are low now.
Exactly. This is a great time to book a Caribbean cruise. I mean, this ship at the moment, you can book a balcony stateroom for around $800-900 per person, which is unbelievable.
Super, absolutely super. Silver Seas is announcing some new destinations for 2008. Let's chat about that.
Yeah, Silver Sea is very good about this. They, you know, with their four ships, they're all about, you know, roughly 400 passenger ships, and since they're catering to people who generally are very, very experienced travelers, they really go out of their way to find new and interesting places to sail. So Silver Sea is introducing 29 new ports for the 2008 cruise season, some of which are very interesting, like Taiwan, Okinawa, Guam, the Marshall Islands, the Marquesas, the Northern Mariana Islands.
Great spots.
Mozambique, Saudi Arabia. They're sailing to Saudi Arabia for the first time. So this is, I mean,
great.
All places. You know, I read that, I'm like, so exotic, so interesting, just fascinating places to go.
Right. And very necessary because, you know, people are just looking for, you know, new destinations, obviously, new ports and places to see that they wouldn't, and as a rule, probably fly to or get to ever see in their lifetime. We have a little time left. Why don't you update us a little bit on what's happening with SureCruise.com?
Oh, well, it may be interesting for people to know that this is what's called wave season in the cruise selling business. Wave season is the first quarter of the year, January through March or April, basically, when people tend to buy a lot of travel. And the reason is the holidays are over, no longer focusing on that. The weather typically turns cold, and people start mulling over, heck, where should I vacation this year? So, you know, as they say, we're just busier than a one-arm paper hanger over here.
And are there any new items on the website that I know you started a couple of new situations, and I haven't had a chance to look at it, but I know there's some new user friendly items up there.
Well, there are. I mean, one thing that we've honed, I've mentioned it once in the past, but we've really gotten it ready for production, is something we call our cruise pricing tattletale.
Right, that's the one I was looking at.
Yeah, and the tattletale is fun, and what that lets people do is see what cruises were dropped in price between today and yesterday. And cruise lines generally, like let's say, for example, they're trying to fill up a ship sailing to the Caribbean in a couple of months.
Right.
They may drop the price on it to fill that ship, but they'll do it kind of quietly because they don't
right.
want to make people angry who may have already booked.
Right.
Or they don't want to get the message, you know, they don't want to loudly announce in the marketplace, hey, we're dropping prices. So they'll just drop the price and see who finds it. And what the tattletale does is make that obvious to people. So you can go in and see that, you know, for example, this cruise where a balcony stateroom might have been $1,000 per person yesterday, today is $500 per person.
Right.
And
now,
these fares typically sell out very quickly, and we just want to make them, you know, very available to people who come to our website.
Now, a quick question on that. I pay $1,000. You come up. We weren't with the same thing in the airline business. All of a sudden, the low, as we call buckets, open up. The fellow that pays $1,000 now comes back and said, "Hey, but wait a minute. This other guy got it for $500. That's obviously covered in a responsibility clause or in terms and conditions, so that he can't come back and say, "Hey, I want a discount."
Well, one of three things happens in a situation like that. The first thing that can happen is, obviously, now for customer reserves, we always go to bat with them, go to bat for them. Even if, like, so for example, the cruise line policy may be that the new lower rate is only for new bookings.
Right.
We don't care. We're going to call the cruise line and harass them about it for the benefit of our customer anyway.
Right.
And one of three things will happen. In the first case, and this generally happens when the cruise is more than a couple of months out, the cruise line frequently will honor the new lower rate, even if you've already paid for the higher rate. The second thing that might happen is that they are reluctant to lower your rate, but what they will do is give you an upgrade on board the ship, like, for example, from outside to balcony. So you're getting advantage of the lower rate of a newly lowered price on a higher category,
right?
But not paying any less. And that's not bad.
No.
That's not unreasonable. And the third thing that can happen is they tell you to go fly a kite.
Right, or give you a credit for another cruise or something.
Well, I mean, occasionally, I'd say maybe 20% of the time, they're just, they dig in their heels and won't do anything. But 80% of the time, we're able to get something done for our customer to get that value back for them one way or the other.
Right. And if they tell you to go fly a kite, I mean, that's it. I mean, you don't really have any options but to fly a kite, do you?
I mean, you don't. And the thing that I'll say about that is, on the one hand, it annoys me as a consumer. On the other hand, I'll say that it's much nicer booking a cruise than it is buying an airline ticket. Because when you buy an airline ticket, you could buy an airline ticket a year in advance. It's totally non-refundable. You're stuck.
Right.
With a cruise ticket, you buy a cruise ticket a year in advance, and you can completely cancel it and get all your money back for, 10 months.
Right.
So it really is, although there are these annoyances that crop up, especially when you're after final payment within 60 days of sailing or so. In general, cruise lines are a lot more flexible and willing to give your money back than, for example, airlines are.
Evan, thank you. We got to run, and we'll talk to you next week.
You're very welcome. Always a pleasure.
Right. Bye for now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Evan Eggers, and we're going to go to break. And when we come back, Gary Sane.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, we're back. Our next guest is Chief Marketing Officer of YPBR, and it's an advertising agency. And their mission statement is that they deliver extraordinary results for their clients through propriety, consumer insights, surprising strategy, big ideas, and bold creative executions. And that's quite a mouthful. Welcome, Gary. That was quite a mouthful for me to get out there.
And I think you want to make sure you say strategy and not tragedy.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
It's great to be on. Thank you.
We're going to chat about the 10 trends to watch in 2007. Why don't you pick it up from there?
Yeah, well, we'll just sort of get right into it. Well, again, thanks for the opportunity to be with you today. We sent this out about 10 days ago, but every year we'd like to sort of forecast what's coming up in the upcoming year, and this is for 2007. But the first one is a big one, and that leisure travel will continue to grow in 2007 and still outpace business travel, even though business travel has rebounded very nicely since 9/11. I think we saw the rebound starting in 2004, and then, of course, 2005 was stronger. Last year was very strong, and we look for this year to be exceptionally strong. In fact, a recent poll by corporate travel managers out there, two-thirds of them have stated that their companies will be doing more business travel in 2007. So when you can, when you combine the leisure travel uptake to the increased business travel, and then also with business travel, don't forget meetings, conventions, and trade shows,
right,
you sort of get a sense of the pressure it's going to put on the industry as far as the supply. And that sort of goes right to number two, and that is the second big trend will be that rates will continue to increase, all for the reasons I said with number one.
Yeah. If we could just hold up there a second, if you will,
sure.
Gary, and let's just go back to business travel for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
We're now seeing all these MaxJet. We're seeing a lot of all business class services from Europe particularly. So I guess that is where the trend is going, as you say. More business travel, more
really
business advantages.
And certainly when you look at the affluent traveler, both leisure and business, you see a lot of the growth in new products, and as you just said, new services such as air travel. A lot of them are appealing more to the upper segment, or I call it the affluent segment of travel.
Right.
And let me look in Orlando, for example. Out of, I think it is 15,000 new hotel rooms that will be built over the next couple years, 75% of those rooms will be high-end, affluent, for affluent travelers. So
right.
That's where the growth is, and if you fast-forward that with demographics, you could see where affluent travel will really outpace all segments of travel.
And you see a rise in the fares, is that basically
what
you're saying?
Yeah, the fares will continue to have. So, you got to be a real savvy traveler in 2007, and the Internet is a powerful tool, and be able to use that tool to really to try to find the best possible opportunity for you. But there's no question that rates will continue to increase. The good news on the air side is right now with oil. Of course, that's a moving target. But right now, the airlines are poised to make the most profit in a decade in 2007, barring any unforeseen issues. But right now, with oil being down, it's a wonderful opportunity for the airlines.
Because it's up and down, and there was
it's up and down.
Right.
But you got to go with what for today.
Right.
It's a wonderful time to travel right now. When you think about the next 3 months, you got some ice storms. Unfortunately, in some parts of the country, but in other places of the country, like Florida, and certainly me in Orlando, where it was 80 degrees yesterday, airfares are a good value. There's still good values in hotel rooms. What a wonderful time to travel.
Absolutely. And let's chat a little bit about what you see with family travel.
Well, family travel actually will increase at probably at a faster rate than overall travel. I think we've seen this trend over the past several years. 9/11 really forced a lot of people to come together and reconnect with one another. You have a lot of destinations now promoting family travel, not only in Orlando, but you also have even the Poconos who are again going after, and really have been in the family market for many years. But when you think about both spouses working, again, you go back to, demographics really drive a lot of this, not only demographics but psychographics. But when you look at, now the tremendous propensity of both spouses now who work, have full-time jobs to support their families, when do they sort of reconnect with one another? And
absolutely.
Certainly when do they reconnect with their kids? And I call it travel by guilt, but it's a great opportunity again for mom and dad to take the kids and get away for an extended weekend or 5 days or 7 days, and use that time not only to have fun and rewind and relax, but also to connect with one another and their family. And we think that will continue to grow over the next several years as well.
Well, I even see Club Med has changed direction,
for all the reasons I cited, and I think it's you see. By the way, I think every destination out there, in some way, can appeal to a family traveler. So, it's certainly on the radar screen with a lot of travel marketers. And again, like anything else in life, it's how you differentiate your message from everyone else to really say to the family, our destination is really, the most relevant for you and what you want to do.
Absolutely.
The big trend, which we continue to see in 2007, was just the role of the Internet. I mean, the Internet is really, they said travel agents were going out of business. Yes, a number of travel agents went out of business. However, There's still about 20,000 left as far as ARC-appointed retail locations, and there's, as you know, there's probably 200,000-300,000 travel agents who actually work out of the home now. In fact, there's been a major shift in where travel agents work now. The majority of them work out of their home.
Yeah, the home-based travel agents.
And by the way, a lot of most cruise sales are still done by travel agents. Travel agents still provide exceptional insight and knowledge on international destinations, and certainly, you know, a lot of domestic destinations as well. Again, if they're more, I call it not commodity destinations, because travel agents really bring a value where they can give you a little bit more knowledge of things that you may not be aware of. That the internet can't provide as well. But having said all that, the internet will continue to be the dominant source of information for lookers, and also now it's about 6 in 10 online leisure travelers now book online. So not only are they booking air, which has always been the standard, but hotel bookings online will soon outpace, and I think they could have outpaced already, airline transactions. So again, as consumers get more used to the internet, have broadband where they can have high speed and access to information, they get more comfortable with booking online, you're going to see travel continue to expand in that area.
And you talk about comparison shopping.
Yeah, well, that's with that, you let your fingers do the walking, so to speak.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
You hop on Kayak right. or any one of these, and, man, you can just compare what you want to several other options and several other sites, and it sort of takes all the work out of it for you. And you're going to see that not only with consumer products but also with travel, being able to compare that family, trip, side by side with several options and taking the best. Hopefully consumers are smart enough to realize it's just not about the best price, but it's about the best value. So my only 2 cents in here would be never just book anything just because of price. Make sure that it's the best value, that you're getting additional value for that price that you're paying.
And in terms of airlines, sometimes what you see online, and you go back to the airline site, and you find that it's even cheaper. Or
well,
it's
there you go. And by
the
way, when you speak about value on the airlines, that becomes a little bit more challenging, because it is perceived more as a commodity. An airline seat is an airline seat. But in the hotel business, and certainly in destinations, certainly with cruise lines, there's a lot more features and benefits and attributes that should be considered than just stacking up a bunch of hotels across the top and saying, okay, which one's the cheapest? That's not the way you should really purchase.
Right. Now, you talk about new lifestyle hotel brands.
Yeah, well, we got these NYLOs, which stands for New York Lofts, and Aloft, which is a Starwood new product. But you see a lot of these. I think we've seen Kimpton have been very successful over the past decade or so with these kinds of hotels. You see a lot of new ones out there. And I think it really is appealing to a lifestyle and more consumers, especially when you look at the younger demographics, the millennials. I call it the echo boomers and millennials, those two generations that are looking for, products and brands, I should say, that really sort of fit their lifestyle. And what you have is, with the NYLOs and the Alofts, those kinds of products, Hotel Indigo is another good example. But very careful, it should not be just judged by age, because, again, it's also psychographic. There's a lot of folks, like me, I'm a boomer, but in many ways I enjoy brands and I enjoy products that maybe appeal more to an echo boomer or maybe even appeal to a millennial. So it's just not your age, it's how you feel. And a lot of us feel a lot younger than really what we are, and I think that also plays to these new products coming up. So again, it's not just an age thing, a demographic, it's really a psychographic.
Yeah, I know. I find it difficult. 17 trapped in this body isn't getting any easier.
Remember, it's all an attitude.
Let's go to the inclusive pricing. Are you referring to all-inclusive pricing?
Yeah, all-inclusive. And, we've seen the all-inclusive resorts, have this for years in the Caribbean. Cruising, by the way, in many ways, cruising has been all inclusive. Now they've started to add more and more add-ons to that. So it's sort of going a little bit the opposite way, but that concept of all inclusive is highly, I think, sought after by, by leisure travelers. By the way, women have a higher preference and propensity for all-inclusive than men. And I think I think what consumers are looking for, travelers are looking for, is ease and convenience. And when you have right. something that's prepackaged and it sort of takes the decision-making out of it, you don't have to worry about where we're going to dinner tonight and got to make reservations and this and that. You take all that out of it, it really becomes what a vacation really is supposed to do, and that is be stress-free. So the all-inclusives, I think, do that probably better than anybody.
And it doesn't preclude you from going out to a dinner somewhere else.
Absolutely not. So much of what travel will be now and in the future is personalization and customization. And I think, you know, you see this now with several, but the idea of having it your way will really dictate how travelers will buy travel and which travel products and services they patronize. So if you can keep it easy for them and make it easy to do business with them, convenient, but also give it to them the way they want it, that's really the two big, I think, marketing tips for 2007 and beyond.
Now, we talk about spas.
Believe it or not, there's 12,000 spas in the United States. Think about that, 12,000 spas. And, you know, years ago and even now, you got to really define what a spa is, but it's more than just, you know, a table in an exercise room that someone lays on. That's not a spa. But I think the industry has become much more educated, much more savvy. Consumers have become much more educated to this. But it's not only a growing trend, but will continue, and you see almost every major resort have one. You see a lot of urban hotels have them. Some companies like Wyndham and even Kimpton, I believe, you can actually order a spa treatment in your own room. So they actually come to your room with the table, the equipment, the oils, whatever it may be, whatever you want done, and it's done in the privacy of your own room. So I think that's just going to continue to grow, and I think more and more affluent, especially affluent travelers, leisure travelers, will be seeking out hotels, resorts that offer some kind of spa experience.
Gary, we're out of time, but to wrap it up, you talk about it should be another record year.
Yeah, it should be, right.
And that's good news.
It is very good news, and I think even 08 will be good. You know, it's hard to look out too far, but certainly in the hotel business, new supply will be coming online, so it will ease up a little bit. It will be good for consumers because pricing may be a little bit more competitive. But the good news for all of us in travel, and the good news for consumers, travelers in general, in that there's just a lot of good, great opportunities out there in the world and a lot of great products and services. And knock on wood, I think we'll have another terrific year in 07.
Well, that's certainly good news. And, Gary, thank you for sharing all this with you. And maybe we can chat about some other things at another time.
Absolutely. I would look forward to it.
All right. Bye for now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, that was Gary Sain of YPBR. And we're going to break. And when we come back, Peter Flaherty is going to be with us. And we're going to chat about the I'll let him tell you. We'll be right back.
This is the story of Mary and Larry. They had cabin fever so bad it was scary.
We need a vacation, a place warm and sunny, a place that's fun for not much money.
Let's escape the cold and the snow. We'll fly Sky Value from Gary, Chicago.
Sky Value now offers great rates from convenient Gary, Chicago Airport to your favorite hotspots, Orlando, St. Pete, Fort Lauderdale, Phoenix, and Las Vegas. Book your flight at flyskyvalue.com.
Gary, Chicago Airport works for me. The drive was easy.
The parking secure and free.
Sky Value. You sure saved us money.
You're so smart.
And so is my honey.
And they flew Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport happily ever after. Fares are one-way subject to availability and change. Restrictions apply. Fares do not include September 11th security fees and other U.S. taxes and fees. See participant agreement for details. Sky Value flights operated by Extra Airways, PC number 06154.
Yeah, we're back, and the Thousand Islands and the ebb and flow of Canadian-American relations is a subject of travel journalist Peter Flaherty, who is with us. Welcome, Peter.
Hello there, Roy, and I like your Irish brogue this morning.
Well, you're my favorite Irishman.
Practicing for St. Patrick's Day, Roy.
Yes. You know, we should make some plans. You guys maybe have to fly down here and celebrate it in Florida.
Well, I'd love to see how you do it down there.
Well, we do it in green.
Well, that's pretty much standard, Roy, everywhere in the world. And we let everybody be Irish on St. Patrick's
exactly.
Day.
Exactly. Everybody's Irish on St. Patrick's Day. And we do tip a few as it tends to be.
Well, sounds good to me.
Great article, as always, Peter. I just think that the statement that you opened the article with, that borders divide countries and peoples, but sometimes they bring them together in transition zones where they can learn more about each other and discover their many similarities and differences. What could be truer than that?
I think it's very true in many places along the 3,000-mile-plus border that we share
right.
with you, we as Canadians share with you as Americans. It's especially true where the border runs right through areas that have been settled for a long time, where people have kind of grown up living close to each other. And I think one of those, probably one of the best examples, I would say, is the Thousand Islands, where the border is the river. People go back and forth all the time. They share the beauty of that wonderful spot, and it really is a place where Canadians and Americans can get to know each other, and that's what struck me on my last visit there.
Right, and you call it the longest undefended border in the world, which is interesting. Yeah.
Yes, although you are bringing in some rules about passports now. You know,
yes.
We're not too happy about
it. But at least they changed the 90-day. They changed the 90-day rule, so that's okay.
That's right.
All right, so let's just see. Let's talk about the origins of tourism in the Thousand Islands, if you like.
Well, the Thousand Islands has been a popular tourist destination really since the late 19th century. And the story I heard that's actually quite an interesting one is that it was a marvelous example of the power of public relations. George Bolt, who built Bolt Castle, was a very successful hotel developer. He made it popular, and then a number of other fairly well-heeled New Yorkers started to summer there. What happened was that the fishing was excellent in those days. It's still pretty good. And they invited General Grant and I believe Sherman, too, if I'm not mistaken, up to do some fishing there. And the press got a hold of it, and, of course, it became a real media event. And once that story got out about how two Civil War heroes, one also a former president, had spent time in the Thousand Islands, it sort of became the wannabe vacation spot for the well-heeled, as I say, who all started buying up islands and building,
right.
in many cases, quite palatial homes. I didn't go into it in the article in detail, but if you take the great boat tour with Uncle Sam boat tours out of either Alexandria Bay or Clayton, the tour will take you past islands that are renowned for the big industrialists, I think Wrigley of Wrigley's Chewing Gum and Mr. Lucky Strike. There are a number of really, really impressive homes, and some of them have stayed in the families, and their descendants still spend the summer months there today.
And you talk about Clayton.
Right.
And go ahead. I was just saying that it was interesting that was an important part of this whole article.
Oh yes, a lot of the big hotels that they're really not too. The era of the big hotels has kind of come and gone. There's the Thousand Island Inn in Clayton is where the home of Thousand Island Dressing.
Right.
It's probably the last of that breed. What you have now is, you know, people either have their own cottages or there's a place on Wellesley Island that I write about, too, the Wellesley Island Inn, which is also a turn-of-the-century hotel. But Clayton was the hub, and that's where people used to come up by train, and they would spend the summer there, either in their own cottage, using that term loosely, or in some of the big hotels that were built along the river. And you get a sense of the sort of grandeur of that time if you go to the Thousand Islands Inn. They have a wonderful dining room, and, of course, your salad comes with Thousand Island dressing, and the food is good, a lot of good seafood. They still have some elements of that, but the town of Clayton now is really quite a peaceful little place, and the river is right there. You can see it from the main street, and it's I enjoy just walking there at dusk. It was a nice change from the big city atmosphere of Toronto.
And there are year-round outdoor activities.
Oh, yes. People think of it mainly, I would guess, as a summer destination. But in a normal winter, I mean, that's a part of the States that gets what I would call a Canadian winter, although this winter has been kind of unusually mild. Ice fishing is very popular. The river freezes over.
And there's all kinds of things like skating and other outdoor activities pretty much year-round, although the big tourist influx, of course, is the summer months, and they have a lot of boating activities and a lot of outdoor stuff that's just, it's tremendous. It's a wonderful spot.
Now, from the geological side, you say that the Thousand Islands were formed after the last great ice age.
Right.
And that their mile-thick glaciers cover almost all of North America, in fact.
Yeah, and as the glaciers retreated, they basically just left those islands as places that had been, you know, that were dug out, and the rock had, the rock is very old. The rock is ancient. In fact, that's Kingston, the Thousand Islands, is really the southern tip of what we call the Canadian Shield. I think you in the States may refer to it as the Laurentian Shield. It's an outcropping of Precambrian rock, some of the oldest rock in the world, and all of that that formed the Thousand Islands was just pretty much etched away as the glaciers moved north at the end of the last ice age. So that's what makes it such a unique geological formation. And of course, as I say in the article, not to nitpick, but they really underestimate themselves. There's more, well, more. That's almost 2,000 islands. I think it's like 1,860 something islands.
But, right.
They use the term island as pretty much any rocky outcropping. So you have them a fair size islands where lots of people live, and there are roads and homes and schools like Wellesley and Grindstone and Wolf Island, the largest Canadian island. Then there are like little things like Tom Thumb's Island, which is really just a little piece of rock and a few grass, I think one tree sticking out of the water, but that technically counts as an island.
Right.
Maybe it's one that you and I could afford.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. and easy to maintain.
Yes, exactly. Not too much grass. You'd have to really think of a very small house, though. Maybe a tent, a pup tent might be more like it.
With one tree house.
Exactly.
And easy, very easy to maintain. Now, you bring up Sackett's Harbor and the War of 1812 in your article.
Very interesting place. Sackett's Harbor, I was happy I was able to include it on my tour. Sackett's Harbor is a charming town in itself. It's, again, a little bigger than Clayton. It's got a lot of lovely 19th century homes, bed and breakfast, excellent restaurants. But it was a really pivotal military base during the War of 1812 for the United States, and in that conflict, Sackett's Harbor was key to whichever side was going to dominate the naval scene in Lake Ontario. And at the time, it was one of the largest military bases in the United States, certainly the largest in the Northeast. And when the British and Canadians attacked it in 1813, that was one of those very key engagements in the war. Had Sackett's Harbor been taken, the whole course of the war might have been very different. So, of course, from the American perspective, the defeat of the British at Sackett's Harbor was a very important victory. And I was really quite impressed with the way the War of 1812 is commemorated. And it's you get a sense that it still is, although to many people on both sides of the border, it might seem like a kind of a long-ago conflict, and people might even be surprised to know that Canadians and Americans once took up arms against each other because we're the best of friends now, of course. But it was pivotal in determining the history of the region. And it's a fascinating place. The battlefield is really well maintained with an interpretive center. And the day I was there, there were people, young people in costume, reenactors, showing sort of the different aspects of camp life and some of the military drill. I was really I really had to think of a place on this side of the border where we've preserved the 1812 history as well as has been done in Sackett's Harbor.
Was there a point where we could have all been one?
Well, that war really could have been one of them. I mean, as a historian, I'm very interested to see how both countries sort of interpret the war differently. Had you won, we probably would have been living under the stars and stripes today. To many Canadians, the War of 1812 is kind of an important point in what we call our elusive search for the Canadian identity, where basically we decided that we didn't want to become Americans, despite some fairly strong appeals from your side of the border that we should maybe consider. But let's just put it diplomatically, the war was a draw. Neither side can really claim
But had it gone the other way, we might have been saying, eh?
Well, that's right. That's right. You're right. but these things, what amuses me about what I enjoyed about the visit there is, of course, that first of all, the Americans living on that side of the Thousand Islands border know Canadians very well. They like Canadians. They cross the border. Canadians come to visit them. They go to visit the other side. And it really is a place where I think we can appreciate, and as we're just doing now, joke about some of the differences and the things that occurred in the past that divided us and made us the countries, you know, the different countries that we are today. But at the same time, there are many, many similarities and areas where we can sort of get together, and Thousand Islands is certainly a place where the natural beauty of the surroundings, the wonderful activities that go on, the food, the history, just the enjoyment of the islands as such a unique destination. That's something that we can really share, and the fact that it's developed and the tourism is all done internationally there. The Thousand Islands Tourist Commission is a joint venture that operates in offices on both sides of the border, and you just basically have to get on the bridge and go over to the other side. It's quite nice.
And for those that are listening, you can go to our website, ttrn.com, and you can read Peter's article in depth. It's a marvelous article, and there's some great photos in Peter. Once again, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. We need to do it more often.
I agree, Roy. Well, I've got a few other articles that I'm working on, so hopefully we'll be talking again soon.
Oh, that's great. Bye for now.
Okay, bye, Roy.
Peter Flaherty, wonderful gentleman and a great writer. We're going to break, needless to say. It's that time, and don't go away, because when we come back, Michelle Newman will be with us, and she's going to take us into Indian country, so hang in there.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
I'm a traveling man, made a lot of stuff all over the world, and in every port I own a part of at least one lovely girl.
Well, we're back, and Michelle Newman is many things, but what I did not know about her is she is a member of the Siksika Nation, and in our continuing Destination Canada series, Michelle is about to take us on a mental journey to Alberta and the Siksika Nation. What is also interesting is that she's in an area that's been snowed in, and we had a little bit of a problem getting through to you, but we've got you now, I hope.
Yep, I'm here, Roy, ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, it's funny because we were getting a recording apparently saying that all the lines are down or busy, so...
Electricity powers out also. I mean, this is as rare as hen's teeth to have snow and ice in San Antonio.
Yeah, that is for sure. First of all, the article is super, and quite an exciting experience for you. And as you say, Gal came from Miami to be out there. It was an incredible experience. And you start off by saying, listen to the animals, and they will speak to you. And you got that from the chief of the Blackfoot Nation. Let's start from there.
Well, if Chief and I were out fishing, he knows that I like to fish, and I was really fortunate and blessed that he took me under his wing and he took me to his favorite fishing hole, and you know, that immediately is trust right there for a guide to share their fishing hole. And to go fishing or hunting on native land is even more of an honor, because that's something that's reserved for the members of the nation. And this was on like an ultra-freezing day. I had about 5 layers of clothes on. I literally looked like a Russian immigrant arriving at Ellis Island. And the chief took me down to his fishing hole. We went fishing. We didn't catch a damn thing. I got bronchitis, and it was really quite a treat doing that. And while we were fishing, all of a sudden this eagle flew overhead, and he said, "Michelle, that is a very good sign." And I said, "What are you talking about? What are you talking about?" He says, "Well, look up there. It's an eagle. That's really special in our culture, and that means it's good luck, and it's a blessing, and it's an omen. And, you know, our people believe that if you listen to the animals, they will speak to you, and we can learn from them."
And, of course,
there's a lot of attention in that culture that's paid to nature, flora, fauna, animals, and they have spirits.
And, of course, it's our national bird.
Exactly.
Now, so then he took you for a little ride in his old beat-up Chevy pickup truck.
Oh, yeah, I got whiplash with that one, Roy.
But it was, I mean, obviously in that kind of country, that's the kind of vehicle you want, something you can beat up and bang up, because
Oh, yeah.
No matter what happens, it's gonna go to pieces. So you got to ride, as you call your physical discomfort and physical representation of a cultural realignment. Now, that's an interesting statement.
Oh, yeah. I mean, things are totally different on the reservation. Whether you call it reservation, nation, whatever, on the Blackfoot Nation, it's different. They even have something called Indian time, which means that nothing, including a powwow or other sacred ceremonies, ever start on time. It's sort of like a bar mitzvah. Nothing starts on time. It's sort of like being in Manana Land, Margaritaville. They've got their own rhythm, and a lot of their lifestyle is tied into the rhythm and seasons of nature. So they're not rushed. They don't have this rush, 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 push mentality that we do in the States. They're much more laid back than we are.
And you also go on to say that when you were driving through the reservation, you came across a small boulder in a grassy spot alongside the riverbank, and it was 3 feet high or about 4 feet wide.
Oh, my God, Roy, that was so funny. The chief's still laughing about that 6 years later. We were driving along the river, actually, finding our little fishing spot, and all of a sudden he slams on the brakes. I almost go through the windshield, and he says, "Hey, Michelle, take a look at that. Look at that rock over there." And I went, "That?" I said, "Oh, my God, chief. You mean you even have graffiti out here, out in the boonies on the reservation?" I said, "I can't believe you got graffiti out here. This isn't New York. This isn't Chicago or Miami." And he said, and he was laughing so hard, "Oh, my God." He said, "Michelle, that's not graffiti. That's one of our sacred rocks that's painted with important symbols and images, and we use that for our ceremonies." And he's still laughing about that to this day. And it was bright red, bright yellow, and it had black and white polka dots on it. And it had a buffalo's head painted on it.
Amazing. And you know, so you really thought you were on the subway there for a moment.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the buffalo is such an important symbol in their culture, because the buffalo was life to the Indians, especially when they were living on the plains before they were living in houses. The buffalo provided skin for their teepees, clothing for their bodies, food for their stomachs. So the buffalo was their life.
Right. Now, and you stayed at the chief's house, what, for three weeks, I guess, huh?
Yes, I stayed with the chief and his lovely wife, Leslie, and Premier Ralph Klein arranged that because I wanted to volunteer. When I was younger, I wanted to be in the Peace Corps, and, of course, my overly protective Jewish parents would not even think of that or allow that. And so now I have my own little Peace Corps where I go around the world and I help people establish cottage industries and share my art with them so that they will be enabled to support themselves and, as I said, initiate cottage industries by me sharing my skills and my textile techniques with them and doing product design and development.
Well, so, let's talk about that for a moment, if you will. So people may not that are listening may not understand the term cottage industry.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you explain it to us?
A cottage industry is really a small business. It could even be in the home. And a lot, for the most part, in third world countries, you'll see cottage industries popping up, like in India, in parts of Central and South America, like Guatemala, and Thailand. And basically, is it's a small business. Usually women are involved. It's usually run by women, not necessarily always, but a lot of times village women. And it will be a handicraft, usually, one of their indigenous types of forms of art that they can now use and earn extra income.
All right. Okay. And so the particular type, was there any, I mean, obviously you're an artist, but was there any particular type of cottage industry that you stress there?
Yes, I'm a textile designer, textile artist, and that's, I've even written a book on textile painting.
Right.
And so I've shared my textile silk painting techniques with the women on the nation. And last time I was there in September, I hosted a silk painting session and we painted dance shawls. And now the women know how to do that and they're going to sell them on the powwow trail.
How cool is that?
Yeah, they were really thrilled. And there's actually an article on that in Native People's Magazine this month.
And what's interesting is that here you've been invited into their home and into their environment, and that you bring to it something entirely different.
Well, you know, if God gave me a talent, what greater gift is there than to share it with other people and make them happy and enrich their lives and give them a way of supporting themselves and supplementing their income?
Absolutely, absolutely. Very well said. Now, from there, you did some day trips.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. There's so much to do in this area. It's absolutely amazing. There's just an abundance. You can either head west and go to Lake Louise and Banff and Jasper National Park, the Glenbow Museum in Calgary, or you could head in other directions and go to the Drumheller and the Royal Tyrrell Dinosaur Museum, which is quite spectacular, and head smashed in Buffalo Jump, which is a UNESCO heritage site.
And you did go to Drumheller, and you drove through the Badlands.
Oh, my God, it's really creepy, Roy.
Really?
Totally creepy. It looks like lunar landscape. It's just totally isolated, desolate, creepy, scary. You would not want to have a flat tire there at night. It is one spooky place.
But you did it, girl.
I did it. I was like a brave little Indian.
You've always been a brave little Indian.
You know, I was adopted by the chief and the tribe.
Well,
I
was just about to head to that. Tell us about that.
Well, it was quite an honor. Not too many white people get adopted by the tribe, and I was adopted by the tribe, and there was a ceremony that initiated me, and one of the elders actually performed a ceremony and blessed me. Clifford Manyguns was the elder that performed the ceremony with the chief, and when Clifford initiated me into the tribe, into the clan, he said, in our culture, we give a name to our people, and the name is usually reflected by something they do or something they are. There's a significance. It's not just a name we pull out of the air. And we are giving you the name Napisaki. And he said that means cloth woman because of your connection with fabric and cloth.
Oh, interesting.
So it indicates something that you do and that's part of your life.
That's terrific. That's
well, it
terrific.
Was quite an honor. As I said, it's not something many white people are ever have that honor. And then another time the chief took me to one of the other elders in the nation for my birthday and had me blessed and had my face painted so that I would be protected.
Well, I mean, that's exciting. I hope you have some good photographs of that one.
No, you're not allowed to take ceremonies. You're not allowed to take photographs during ceremonies because that would be considered highly disrespectful.
Okay.
And it's really important to respect their wishes and their culture.
Well, the other thing you mentioned in here that's very interesting is teepee designs. Tell us about that.
Teepee designs are actually fascinating. When you go to a powwow, you will see a cluster, like a camp of teepees that have been erected. And it can take several hours to erect a teepee. And it's a lot larger than you think. The inside of a teepee can actually accommodate anywhere from 12 people for sleeping up to 15 or 20 people to sit inside the teepee. And the teepees are usually bright and colorful. And the teepee designs come from dreams and visions. And they also reflect the natural flora and fauna and landscape that surrounds the reservation and the plains. And these images are also passed down from one family member to another. They are inherited. And my dear friend, my Blackfoot sister, Lavina Crossguns, invited me to her teepee transfer ceremony, where she just finished painting her teepee. And the images that she painted on her teepee came from her dream that she had one night. And she was even directed what colors to paint her teepee. And then the teepee had to be properly transferred and blessed by one of the elders. And now this is her teepee design that she went on public notice saying, this is my teepee, this is my teepee design, and this will go to my grandchildren, and nobody can use it but my family without my explicit permission.
Now, what do they, if they're living in houses, I mean, do some people actually live in the teepees, or these, or just...
Sometimes they stay in the teepee in the summer. It's also used during the Calgary Stampede. They set up an Indian village where they'll set up, you know, beautiful teepees. And at powwows, the teepees come out. No, they don't really live in them, but they might camp out in them. They might have ceremonies in the teepees, family gatherings in the teepee. But no, all of my friends on the Blackfoot Nation have lovely homes. And some of them have teepees that they'll erect in their backyards, as I said, for special events and special occasions.
And a special occasion, as you so indicate in your article, is the powwow. Let's chat about that.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, like Bob Fisher and I spoke about while we were traveling together and going to the powwow. You know, powwow is the ultimate form of theater. It is beyond a Broadway production. You've got costumes. You have plumage. You have exquisite buckskin dresses. You have the elders wearing their buckskin outfits with elaborate beadwork. You have exquisitely beaded dance shawls with fringe that are, you know, a yard long that sway in to the beat of the pounding rhythmic drums. You have a grand entry, which is like a parade, where the chief is leading this grand entry into powwow, and he's got his whole entourage with him, and it's a grand spectacle. You have flag bearers. You have the dancers following the chief. The chief is holding a carved eagle head staff with him to indicate his power, his prestige, and it's regal. I mean, that's all I can say. It is a regal experience to see this.
Sounds like your life has been changed somewhat.
Oh, my God. My life was so transformed by this experience. There were so many valuable lessons that I learned while living on the nation. It's unbelievable. It did change my life. And I also made some special friends along the way. I mean, I was welcomed into their hearts and their homes. And, as I said, adopted into the tribe, which is the greatest honor of all.
Michelle, it's a great article. There's some great photos. And for those listening, if you'd like to read this article more in depth, you can do so by going to our website, ttrn.com. And
Roy, can I invite everybody out there to this summer in July? We're having the opening of the Interpretive Center at Blackfoot Crossing, and it's going to be a spectacular event, and I know people will want to attend that.
Certainly. And how would they get more information?
They can go online to www.siksiknation.com. And what we'll do is we'll post that on your website so people will have access to getting additional information for the Blackfoot Crossing.
That's super. I think that I might like to do that myself. In fact, if I were going to plan a trip out into that area, summer would have probably been my first choice.
Summer or fall, yes, oh. I agree.
Michelle, it's super. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us and share
my
this
pleasure,
with our audience.
Roy.
And we look forward to chatting with you again.
Thank you.
It's
bye-bye
a pleasure.
Now.
Bye now. Michelle Newman, a new Indian in our Blackfoot tribe, and it seems very happy about it. You're listening to Talking Travel, the voice of travel live on the Travel Talk Radio Network and worldwide at ttrn.com. You can find your favorite guest by going to our program schedule icon on the ttrn.com website. Next week, my guests will be Evan Eggers, Carol Ketterhagen, Bonnie and Bill Neely, and Johnny Jett. So until then, this is Roy Lowy wishing you happy travels.
You've been listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Visit our website at ttrn.com for complete show archives and interviews with guests like Chris Elliott,
Peter Greenberg, Bob Fisher, Johnny Jett, and many other great travel professionals. Don't forget to tune in live every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern for more Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends.